Hi, I'm Whitney.
And I'm Camden. Welcome to Ghosts and Garnets.
Welcome to a new era where Camden has an excellent new microphone.
It is excellent. I'm going to show Whitney how fancy.
It's so fancy. I'm jealous.
I know.
Well, guys, we miss everyone and I miss your face. And I feel like even though we only cut back to halftime, I feel like we've cut down to like way more than halftime. I'm sorry. The cat is driving me nuts. Guys, this might be a shit show. I just finished the 17-page long script. I
was 3 minutes ago. Well, let's get into it then. We got a long one for you.
All right. I didn't even write an intro because I was like, fuck, I'm late. So the story we have for you today essentially is about a man who things were not going great for him. Granted, he was not handling life very well, but instead of putting on his big boy pants, he decided to handle things like a total fucking little bitch asshole. And it's brand spanking new, this story. So people who don't like old timey, you're going to be thrilled because the trial ended, I think, 2 weeks ago. We don't even have a sentence yet.
Yeah.
For this. Mm-hmm. So you guys are... You guys that like the newfangled stories, here you go. On Tuesday, March 19th, 2024, in a Kootenai County courthouse, former Idaho State Police Trooper Daniel Howard was found guilty of the second-degree murder and domestic battery for the death of his wife, Kendi Wilkins. Nearly 3 years after Kendi's death, her family felt like finally they could breathe, like they finally had some answers. Because when Kendi was found dead on February 21st, 2021, all they had were questions. Questions and the bone-deep knowledge that everything Daniel Howard said about the night that Kendi died were absolute lies. And this has happened up kind of in Camden's hood.
I was just going to say, this is right around the corner, so I'm a little excited.
All these teeny tiny towns that we're going to talk about are...
my neighbors.
North of Camden's area. Yeah.
Kendi Wilkins was born in Orofino, Idaho on April 30th, 1972 to parents Janie and Wendell Wilkins. She, her brother Brian, and her parents lived in northern Idaho while she was growing up, moving from Kamiai to Lewiston when Kendi was 4 years old. Kendi loved Barbies, dancing, singing, putting on performances for her family, and even raced in the Powderpuff motorcycle class at several local tracks. When Kendi was in the fifth grade, the family moved back to Kamiai, and although Kendi was sad to leave her friends, she was thrilled when she was given her very first horse, named Poppy No-Go. She started participating in rodeos every chance she got. In high school, she started working in the restaurant industry around town, where she was known as a great waitress and a better friend. Kendi met a boy named Jim Forsman, and they fell in love. After graduation, Kendi and Jim had a daughter, Brooke. While things between Kendi and Jim didn't work out, she was happy and she was a loving mom. In 1994, Kendi met and married an Idaho State Trooper named Dan Howard. Brooke was a toddler at this point, and together they had a son, Wyatt, and the family moved to Lewiston, then to Powell, before settling in Athol, a tiny northern Idaho town of less than 1,000 people. Kendi worked at Kootenai Health and was well known for her bright smile and outgoing personality. She volunteered as a 4-H leader, helping her kids and other kids in the community. She loved being outside, attending concerts, a good beer, and spending time with her friends. Quote, she was the first one to want to go out and do whatever. In any weather, she was always down to do something. She was so kind. Sometimes that was overlooked because of how fun she was with this big personality. Those who knew Kendi Howard say she was like a magnet. Her love of life was infectious. Although Kendi was, from all outward appearances, happy with the life she had built, things started to fall apart pretty spectacularly around 2011. While on duty, Dan Howard fired his gun as a fleeing fugitive backed a Jeep into him. He mistakenly shot the female passenger, who died. Howard spent the next 9 months on leave and had little contact with the agency or fellow troopers. The shooting was ruled justified by an outside agency, and although Howard returned to duty, it really fucked him up. As it would.
As it would. And, you know, Russ has a good friend who is in law enforcement and was involved in an officer-involved shooting. And although it was justified, his friend was and still is severely fucked up from it.
Oh, yeah. It's like super traumatic.
Later. Yeah. So I can't imagine, as a law enforcement officer, what that would do to you when, you know, your whole job is to, like, protect and serve and help people and you accidentally kill someone.
Right.
And he's just, like, in the car at the wrong time, you know? Right. Wasn't even, like, a back.
Yeah.
Well, after returning to duty, the hits kept coming for Dan. When in 2013, Kendi confessed to him that she had been having an affair with his best friend, Matthew Wood. Howard reacted badly, threatening to kill Wood, pouring syrup in Wood's vehicles, leaving him vulgar messages, and firing a shotgun at his house. While investigating these incidents, police also uncovered thousands of rounds of stolen Idaho State Police ammunition at Howard's residence in Athol, and noted that the ammo had disappeared when they returned weeks later with search warrants. Howard claimed that he kept the ammo at his house for convenience. He was a shooting range officer and lived near the range. Dan was put on administrative leave in 2014 without pay as investigators looked into criminal charges he faced in Kootenai and Bonner counties, according to the CDA Press. On top of stealing thousands of rounds of ammunition from state police, Howard had used a fake name in an application for a motorcycle. He agreed to a plea deal in 2015 and took responsibility for crimes that cost him his career as an Idaho State Trooper and took a heavy toll on his family. Quote, "I screwed up and I stand here utterly ashamed," Howard said before he was sentenced for malicious injury to property, petty theft, title fraud, and failing to tag a deer he shot. "I will forever endeavor to correct these wrongs," he said. Five people spoke on Howard's behalf at his sentencing, including his father and Kendi, with whom he had reconciled. Many other friends, former co-workers, and family members wrote letters to the judge and attended the hearing in support. Glenn Swearingen, a retired trooper who had known Howard for 21 years, called his friend intelligent, philosophical, hardworking, and dedicated to family.
I know him.
You know him? I think it's weird to call someone philosophical. Defense attorney Chris Bugby said Howard was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. Quote, "He was just falling apart. That's the simplest way to put it. He was at rock bottom." Deputy prosecuting attorney Art Vanderheren asked the judge to impose a 5-year prison sentence, saying it was justified because Howard betrayed the public trust as an officer and because his crimes spanned 9 months, requiring a lot of thought and preparation. Bugby disputed that characterization. He was a hurt, damaged person who also just happened to be a police officer. First District Court Judge Benjamin Simpson imposed a suspended prison term of 3 years and placed Howard on probation. However, Simpson also ordered Howard to serve 120 days in local jail and perform 600 hours of community service. The judge said he believed Howard acted under considerable stress brought about by his return to duty following the 2011 shooting. The judge said, quote, "It's obvious to me that you are not yourself. You were a broken human being. You rehabilitated yourself. A lesser man could not have done that," end quote. Somehow, Dan and Kendi managed to stay together through all of this mess, but things weren't great moving forward. Dan took a job in Alaska, working there 3 weeks out of the month, and life for the Howards moved on, although the marriage itself was barely hanging on.
Did you find anything about why he used a false name to title a motorcycle?
No. You know, I don't know why he did that.
When I was looking into this one, and I was like, why?
The only thing I can think of was maybe, like, his credit wasn't good, although I didn't find anything that suggested that they were having money issues. In fact, they were pretty well off.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure why he would use a name other than his own. It's
super
very
odd.
Strange.
Hmm.
Yeah. And also stealing, like, 30,000 rounds of ammo. It's like an obscene amount of emotion.
Yeah, that doesn't really sound to me like a man who is going through it because his wife had an affair and because he accidentally shot somebody on duty. It sounds to me like somebody who was found justified, and he was, of shooting somebody, and went back to work, and sort of like things got a little loosey-goosey for him because he was cleared of something already.
Yeah, well, and it also said, too, like, he had a lot of resentment towards the department, because even though it was found justified, I think he sort of felt like they didn't really back him the way that they should have.
Right.
But this guy also, through the series of events that are coming up, shows you that he doesn't really take any kind of accountability for any of the choices that he makes.
Right. And we're not doing this story because he's a good man.
No, we're doing this story because he's a fucking creep. So, granted, his wife cheated on him. That's not great. That's not a great look. But as an officer of the law and just a human being in the world, we all know you're not actually allowed to kill someone because they cheated on you. It's just like the basic, like, adult 101 that we all have to learn, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of a bummer sometimes. By 2020, Dan's mental health was not improving, and things were getting scary, which was made apparent by a 911 call in July, in which Kendi claimed she heard a gunshot and that she was worried that her husband may have killed himself, but she couldn't find him. She sounded visibly distraught on the dispatch call. When she did find him, he wouldn't speak to her, she relayed to the 911 dispatcher. Even more troubling, she also began sending photos of bruises on her body to her friends, and during a July camping trip, Kendi's close friend, Michelle Lampert, saw bruises on Kendi. Michelle already wasn't a fan of Dan because he was arrogant and controlling when it came to money. But the proof of his being physically abusive was enough for Michelle to encourage Kendi to divorce Howard. That same year, Kendi rekindled a friendship with her high school boyfriend, Daniel Pardo, which quickly turned romantic. They fell deeply in love, and while Kendi kept the romance a secret from her husband, she quietly began making plans to divorce Dan Howard. She looked at homes in Kamiai and found one she loved. She also found a new job, decided to take a break from drinking alcohol, and started making plans to get in shape. She started telling friends and family that she wanted to open an antique store, and although she was excited for the future, Dan Pardo said Kendi was stressed about the idea of leaving her 27-year marriage to Daniel Howard. Quote, she was pretty terrified about how he was going to react when she told him, end quote. In January 2021, Kendi Howard started making arrangements for divorce. She told Dan she was leaving him and had contacted an attorney. Between property the couple owned and Dan's retirement benefits, Kendi would have walked away from the marriage with nearly $1 million. And needless to say, this pissed Dan the fuck off. In the early hours of January 29th, 2021, Pardo said he got a phone call from Kendi. Kendi wasn't speaking directly to him on the phone. Rather, he could hear her speaking to Howard, and he could hear Howard's voice in the background. He could tell that Kendi was really distraught and emotional, and he could also hear her say she was trying to go to the bathroom, along with some thumps, like she was struggling to close a door. He heard Daniel Howard ask Kendi who she was talking to on the phone before Kendi ended the call. Hours later, he said Kendi called him again, distraught and sobbing. She told him she woke that morning to see her husband standing over her, wearing dark clothes and gloves. She said she saw a magazine from a gun on the floor. Quote, she said, when he looked at me, he was looking right through me, Pardo said. He went on to say that she said she felt Mr. Howard was going to kill her, end quote. Pardo said he hung up and called Kendi Howard's parents, who in turn called 911. After Kendi's parents called 911, two sheriff's deputies responded to the Howard home for a welfare check. Deputy Jonathan Traw testified that Kendi seemed anxious and scared when he spoke to her, though she also seemed relieved when police arrived. The husband and wife told police they were discussing divorce but denied any arguments or physical altercations. While deputies were at the home, Kendi packed a bag and went to stay with her parents in Kamiai. Pardo joined her at her parents' home, where he said she repeated that she had seen a magazine from a semi-automatic pistol on the floor the night before. On February 1st, Kendi's brother, Brian, and Daniel Howard traveled 3 hours together to help out Kendi's father, and during their drive, Dan asked Brian point blank if Kendi had been having an affair, and Brian told him yes, Kendi was having an affair. They stayed overnight, and later Brian would testify that he could hear Dan pacing all night long, and that he didn't sleep at all that night. The next day, Daniel drove recklessly the whole way home. That same day, Kendi told her boyfriend, Dan, that she needed to go back to Athol. She had an eye appointment, and she had to go to work. She said she had animals she needed to take care of, and although she was afraid of Howard, she felt better since the police had visited, thinking that this would deter him from doing anything stupid. She said to Pardo, quote, "I'm scared to go back, but he knows now he got caught. He's not dumb enough to try anything like that again," end quote. She also seemed positive in the fact that Daniel had seemed more accepting of the idea of the divorce in the last few days, which had the opposite effect on Pardo. It made him suspicious, and it didn't feel right to him at all that Daniel had suddenly had a change of heart about all of this. That evening, February 2nd, Dan Pardo spoke with Kendi on the phone, and she told him she was happy things were moving forward and excited about the new house that she had made in Avron. That was the last time that Dan Pardo would ever speak to Kendi.
Isn't it crazy that you are able to rationalize things in your head? You're with someone for this long. I mean, they were together almost 30 years. And she wakes up and he's standing over her like the fucking Grim Reaper. And she sees a gun magazine on the floor and he's wearing gloves and black clothes. And she's able to like totally rationalize to herself. And we all do this, not even 2 days later, like, oh, he won't do anything. You know, like the police came. We are able to like convince ourselves that things aren't as bad as they seemed to us.
Right.
Out of like some kind of self-preservation mode.
It's like a coping mechanism, really. Like,
yes. Yeah, you go back to the house where you know that there is a danger to you. And I'm not victim blaming at all because we all do this. This idea of like, I know him. Yeah, he's maybe fucked up, but he's not actually going to do anything. Like, I can go back and take care of my animals and have him rationally sign some papers, you know?
Right. I mean, it's always like everybody says it on like Dateline or anything when you watch any of those things happen to other people. They don't happen to me. Right. It just doesn't seem like it could be a real thing that you would actually face. And so we rationalize it away. It's crazy.
All right. Late on the night of February 2nd, 2021, Daniel Howard called the police department and told them his wife had shot herself and he needed assistance. The 17-minute phone call was punctuated by Daniel Howard wailing, gulping for breath, and retching. When sheriff's deputies arrived at the scene, they found Daniel Howard outside. Body camera footage showed him shouting, moaning, gagging, and repeatedly doubling over in apparent distress. He was often covering his face with his hands. Though he continually sobbed, police said his eyes were dry. But right away, investigators said red flags were going up. The scene felt wrong, off somehow. Inside the house, police saw a duffel bag packed with a woman's clothing. The dryer was running, full of towels and rugs. Lieutenant Zach Sifford said he's responded to about 100 suicide deaths in his law enforcement career. In those cases, he said family members typically beg police for a sheet to cover their deceased loved one's body or for a pillow to place under the person's head. Daniel Howard didn't make any such requests, though his wife was nude in the bath and many deputies were around. Quote, "There didn't seem to be any care for the dignity of the body," Sifford said. Lynn Acevedo, chief deputy coroner for Kootenai County, responded to the scene several hours after police arrived. In the master bedroom, she photographed tiny shards of glass on the beige carpet. Across the hall, she photographed the bathroom where Kendi lay in the tub. The water was still warm when police had arrived. Tinged red from blood, though a lot less blood than Acevedo would have expected for someone who died from a gunshot wound. The bath mat was sopping wet, although Kendi Howard was still in the tub. The only towels in the room were decorative ones, perfectly folded. A purse and cell phone sat on the counter by the sink, Acevedo noted some of Candy's dark hair had fallen across her face, though most of her hair was pulled back and clipped in place. Her body seemed to be positioned strangely, with her feet wedged against the side of the tub. The blood around Candy Howard's mouth and cheek appeared to have flowed upward, Acevedo noted. It's going the wrong way for someone who has a head down in a bathtub from a gunshot wound to the mouth, she said. There was also blood on Candy's chest. The blood resting on her skin didn't appear to be in a normal form for someone that had shot themselves intraorally. Kenneth Lalatin, now retired detective with the Kootenai County Sheriff's Office, responded to the scene that day, spending nearly 9 hours inside the house collecting statements and evidence. He noticed Candy Howard's body was covered in bruises sustained before her death. Sometime after Candy had left work the day she died, she had also sustained a large second-degree burn on her forearm. Shallow cuts on her feet suggested she had stepped on something sharp, like the glass shards found in the bedroom. All these elements indicated a struggle. All this added up to an altered crime scene. Investigators were sure of it. Police asked Daniel Howard if he had any gunshot residue on his hands. He told them he did, but it was there because he had fired his Glock earlier in the day to test the new sights he'd installed. Then he, quote, plunged his hands into his coat pockets and rubbed them around, said Jerry Northrup, an investigator with the Idaho State Police Cold Case Unit. He collected Daniel Howard's Glock and examined it. Quote, the firearm exhibited no obvious signs that it had been recently fired or recently cleaned. The gun also had the original factory sights, he said. Daniel Howard made little eye contact and appeared to be frustrated, investigators noticed. He told investigators that the two were having problems and they were in the middle of signing off on a divorce. He hinted that Candy may have wanted to die by suicide because she had just made an offer on a house in Kamiai and had gotten upset when he mentioned he wanted to include it as a property in the divorce proceedings. Daniel Howard said while he was filling out paperwork that night, he, quote, heard a thud, but didn't bother going to investigate what the sound was for over 2 hours. Now, keep in mind, the bathwater was still warm when the cops got there. Down in Kamiai, Candy's family was worried. Her daughter said her grandparents just had a feeling something was wrong with Candy. This was a family that was always in contact with each other. And they hadn't been in touch with her for a few hours, and things were bad enough that the family knew that they needed to be in contact with her. They knew divorce was coming. They knew he knew that the divorce was coming, and it was her habit to check in pretty often with them, and they hadn't heard from her in a few hours. And so when Brooke got a call from her stepfather, Dan Howard, she said, quote, he just said that there had been an accident. He said she shot herself, unquote. That's how she found out that her mom had died. And she said she knew immediately it wasn't suicide. And Brooke called her grandparents to tell them that Candy had died. And I bet when investigators allowed Daniel Howard to notify her family of his wife's death, the last thing they expected was that Candy's daughter, Brooke, would immediately accuse her stepfather of killing her mother, but that is exactly what happened. Officer Lalatin overheard this entire conversation where after Daniel Howard said that her mom had died, Brooke immediately said to him, "You killed her." And Daniel Howard was visibly shaken and denied the accusation, but police knew they needed to speak with Candy's family right away. And as soon as Candy's parents heard of her death from Brooke, they drove the 3.5 hours from Kamiai to Athol, where their grandson Wyatt, Candy's son, had already arrived. And this breaks my heart. Her dad said later that he walked into the house and looked at Wyatt, his grandson, and said, "You know your dad did this," as Wyatt stood there crying. Yeah. The Wilkinsons said Daniel never emerged from the house, nor did he ever contact them after their daughter died. Though he paid for Candy's cremation, he reportedly did not contribute money for her funeral or a cemetery plot. Her parents paid for both. More than 200 people attended Candy Howard's funeral in Kamiai. Daniel Howard was not among the mourners.
Yeah, of course he paid for a cremation.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And, you know, we talk a lot about, like, well, you'll see with Mayo, Idaho, but I thought we had sort of, like, run the gamut of the most incompetent coroners / medical examiners. Nope. Man, did I find some good stuff. Yeah, I thought it was interesting, too. He paid for her cremation, but then her parents bought a cemetery plot. So I don't know if she was cremated or...
People do that a lot so that they have somewhere to visit. Or, and when other family is in the cemetery together. But yeah, I've heard of them doing it quite often, actually. They'll buy a cemetery plot, put a plaque there just so they have somewhere to go. Somewhere physical to sit.
I don't want to be in a cemetery. My spirit's not going to hang out in one. Cremate my ass. I don't care what you do with it. And I'd like to be one of those tree people, you know?
Well, yeah, because then you essentially will live forever.
Yeah. And my corpse will grow a living thing. It'll be so creepy and cool.
Yeah, mine's going to be right next to yours. So.
No, it's going to be my dead body tree and Camper's Snow White coffin. And our poor children are going to have to maintain our final resting places.
My kids are like adamantly like, absolutely not. You're so fucked up.
Russ will do it, but I don't know who's going to do it after he kicks it because no one's as nice as him.
No one is as nice as him. He's so nice that I bet he'll do my wishes for me when none of my family will. And my wishes are fucking weird.
So yeah, they are.
I'm just going to give it a thanks, Russ, in advance. Kootenai County does not employ a medical examiner, so Kendi Howard's body was sent to the Spokane County Medical Examiner's Office for autopsy. On February 3, 2021, former Spokane County Medical Examiner Dr. John Howard, no relation, performed an autopsy of Kendi Howard. He did not note the bruising on her chest she received before her death, a sign of cutting off someone's airway. He didn't find anything that would point him in the direction away from a self-inflicted gunshot wound, and noted the cause of death as a gunshot wound and the manner of death as undetermined. After the autopsy was complete, Lynn Acevedo happened to see Kendi Howard's body while she was at a funeral home following up on a different case. She examined the body again, this time noticing significant discoloration that wasn't apparent on the night of the death. Acevedo photographed Kendi Howard's body from head to toe, documenting bruises on her right arm reminiscent of fingers, as well as bruises on her knees and legs, wrist, and chest. A dark pink burn was visible on her right forearm, as well as bruising. The left side of her jaw was swollen and bruised. Her jaw had been broken. When a medical examiner makes a conclusion about a person's death, they typically consult with law enforcement about the events leading up to the death to gain guidance on what to look for. In this case, John Howard never spoke with police, never viewed any photos of the scene, and never coordinated with the Kootenai County Chief Deputy Coroner Lynn Acevedo, who visited the scene that night and noted that Kendi Howard's body, quote, didn't look right. Spokane's Deputy Medical Examiner Mackenzie Mott called Detective Lawlatin sometime after the report to tell him that there were inconsistencies she observed. The report was also sent to the Kootenai County Coroner's Office, whose investigators didn't see totally eye-to-eye with John Howard either. Police knew this case wasn't a suicide. They just had to prove it. So, for 2 years following the autopsy, law enforcement continued their investigation and pondered the circumstances surrounding Kendi Howard's death, until finally an arrest warrant was obtained, charging Daniel Howard with the murder of his wife. He turned himself into the Kootenai County Jail on April 21st, 2023. That is like obscenely wild to me that you would have a medical examiner who does not confer with the law enforcement that was on the scene to put together a total story of what happened to this person.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Well, and for people who don't know, so Spokane is in Washington, but it's real close to where all of these little towns are. So because there's not a large metropolitan area up that far north in Idaho, a lot of these get sent over to Spokane. And I will tell you that this is a habitual pattern in this medical examiner's office. It's just lazy fucking work. I mean, this woman, clearly the investigators were like, something's fucking off here. The coroner's office, something's fucking off here. This is weird. Why does she have cuts all over her feet?
And why is her jaw broken?
Why does she have bruising all over her fucking body?
And a giant burn on her arm. Like,
he doesn't note any of that. And he's like, yep, self-inflicted gunshot wound to the mouth. She's in a bathtub and there's hardly any fucking blood. And you're saying she shot herself in the head? Okay, sir.
No.
All right. So the trial began March 4th, 2024, 1 month ago. Prosecutors alleged that Dan Howard had killed his wife for two reasons. One, she had been having an affair and that really irked him. And two, he did not want to split their $2 million worth of assets with her in the divorce. Now, prosecutors said that Daniel Howard had killed Kendi using the carotid restraint technique, which is something that is taught to all law enforcement officers, and it makes you pass out. Once he did that, he placed her body in the bathtub, and then he shot her in the mouth and staged the scene to look like she had died by suicide. Dr. Bill Smock, a Louisville physician in forensic medicine who previously had testified in the murder trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, told jurors that Kendi Howard did not die by suicide. She died by homicide. Prosecutors had argued that Daniel Howard killed his wife by putting her in a carotid restraint, which was the technique that involved hooking an elbow around the subject's head and using the forearm and the bicep to apply pressure to both sides of the neck. Now, this cuts off blood flow to the brain and can render a person unconscious in 5 to 10 seconds, and sustained pressure can be fatal. Defense counsel argued on cross-examination that Kendi Howard had no marks on her neck to indicate strangulation, nor did she have petechiae, which are tiny hemorrhages in the eyeballs, when capillaries in your eyes overfill with blood and pop, when, you know, you have broken capillaries in your eyes. And strangulation often causes this to happen. But Dr. Smock said petechiae aren't a given when carotid restraint is used. If no blood is flowing into the capillaries from the carotid arteries, they won't pop, he said. Carotid restraint may leave no bruising on the neck, he added. It takes just 11 pounds of pressure to block the carotid artery. That's nothing, he said. That's how easy it is to block blood flow to the brain and never, ever leave a mark. Smock also testified that the bullet that shot Kendi Howard had a downward trajectory. Smock said that's inconsistent with the self-inflicted gunshot wound. Suicides go up, he said. Homicides go down. Dr. Ryan Rembaran, a Pennsylvania trauma surgeon, testified that Kendi Howard sustained a gunshot wound inside her mouth after she had died. The bullet traveled through her tongue, nearly bisecting it, then severed the C2 vertebrae and lodged in the back of her neck behind her spine. Had Kendi Howard been alive when she was shot, he said, she would have been unable to breathe because her spinal cord was severed, but her heart would have continued to beat and pump blood throughout her body without any input from her nervous system for some time after breathing stopped, usually between 1 and 3 minutes. He said she would have bled profusely from the wound in her tongue for as long as her heart had continued to beat. He said, quote, there's going to be a tremendous amount of blood loss that occurs from this type of wound, unquote. Because the vocal cords and esophagus would have closed when the spinal cord was severed, the blood would have filled her mouth, then poured out. If Kendi Howard's heart beat for 1 minute after she was shot, the doctors estimated she would have lost about a liter of blood. It would have sprayed through the tub and made the bathwater totally opaque. But police could easily see the gun and a spent shell casing at the bottom of the tub where her body lay through the red tinted water. Quote, to a degree of medical certainty, she was not alive when she was shot, Rembaran testified. And I know a lot of people, that's probably too much information. I just find it all fascinating. The science of how you can tell what happened to a person, like what evidence a person's body can leave behind. And the fact that I just learned this probably a year ago, that your heart will continue to pump even after your spinal cord is severed, because your heart doesn't need your nervous system in order to continue to work, which I think is fascinating.
It probably is fascinating. It's amazing.
Real fucking weird, but it is amazing. And it's wild that there is this method of essentially strangulation that someone can use that will not cause the bilateral petechial hemorrhaging in eyes or bruising around the neck. And it uses a shit ton less pressure than actual manual strangulation does. And police are taught how to do it.
Right. Because it's it's essentially quote unquote harmless way to get somebody to not get the fuck off.
Right.
Now, forensics were a big part of this case. Kendi Howard's body was significantly moved after her death, a blood splatter expert said in court. Randolph Beasley, a forensic consultant who specializes in blood stain analysis, was among the final witnesses for the prosecution. Beasley told jurors that three different blood stains on Kendi Howard's chest, nose, and mouth appeared to change direction after blood began to flow. Quote, one particular stain made a right-hand turn, showing her body was moved, he testified. Lynn Acevedo, chief deputy coroner for Cooney County, had previously testified that she noticed the blood around Kendi Howard's mouth and cheek appeared to have flowed upward against gravity, in quote, the wrong way for someone who has a head down in a bathtub from a gunshot wound to the mouth, end quote. Beasley made the same observation. Using a styrofoam head and fake blood, he demonstrated for jurors how Kendi Howard's head would have to move in order for blood to flow the way that it did. Quote, her head had to flip way back for that stain to make that little turn to the right, he said. The change in blood flow pattern was consistent with Kendi Howard's body moving after she began bleeding. Trauma surgeon Dr. Ryan Rambaran previously testified that she could not have moved on her own after she was shot because the bullet severed her spinal cord. Beasley said he believed the best explanation for the change in blood flow pattern was that someone picked Kendi Howard up by the arms and maneuvered her body while she was in the bathtub, causing her head to flop backward. To combat the defense's argument that Kendi had been suicidal, jurors also heard testimony Philip Hanger, a clinical psychologist. Kendi Howard faced, quote, significant stressors before her death, he said, including an imminent divorce, a planned move to Kamiai, and a possible job change. But stressors don't necessarily lead to suicide, Hanger said. More important than stressors are a person's ability to cope. Hanger said Kendi Howard appeared to be coping with the stressors in her life. She was in close contact with family and friends. She had plans in the near and far future and expressed excitement about her goals. She got her nails done hours before she died, which Hanger could indicate she was actually taking care of herself. Quote, it's improbable that this person would be at a risk of self-harm. This is not somebody who, in my impression, would be at imminent risk of suicide, end quote. Hanger noted that people close to Kendi Howard did not indicate concern about her mental health, except for her husband. He pointed to a conversation with police where Daniel Howard said his wife had once put a gun to her head, but shot the floor instead. There were no other witnesses to the event. Facebook messages indicated Ms. Howard was aware that Daniel had suggested she get mental health treatment because of her emotional responses, that she had bipolar, Hanger said. He had indicated in his Facebook response that he knew as much as a shrink does. Friends and family of Kendi also testified that she was not suicidal in any way and looking forward to the future. A couple of her friends testified that her husband had been abusive and that they had seen evidence of his abuse, and Kendi's daughter, Brooke, testified. On the stand, she referred to Dan Howard as, quote, the most brutal man she'd ever known. Yeah, I mean, to me, sure, there's a lot of stressors there. I mean, divorce is stressful, moving is stressful, but, like, buying a new house and starting a new job and having this new relationship and moving closer to her family, those are all, like, great things, really. Stressful, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and it truly depends on the person. And I think if you're in a terrible marriage and you're getting a divorce, sometimes that isn't so much a stressor as like a relief.
Right.
Well, this is just This is just maybe my favorite part of this whole story. So about 2 weeks into the trial, on the evening of Friday, March 16th, 2024, Daniel Howard was arrested at the Spokane International Airport and was taken back to Kootenay as a fugitive. His attorney, Jason Johnson, claimed that he was just helping a friend drop off a rental car and forgot that he wasn't allowed within 2 miles of the airport per his bond. Prosecutors said that they thought that Dan Howard was attempting to flee right after they rested their case and was eluding deputies who were surveilling him at the time. So they surround him at the Spokane National Airport, and they get his friend, McCullough, is in the passenger seat of the car, and they take Howard out, and they're questioning him, and they're like, hey, we need to search your car. And McCullough's like, yeah, all right. And they said, quote, Mr. McCullough consented to a search but advised officers that he had put a gun under Mr. Howard's seat. This gun was a full-sized Glock, said Stanley Morton, said Kootenay County prosecutor. The defense said the gun was indeed Dan Howard's, and the prosecution believed Howard was trying to flee and would cut his ankle monitor in the final moments. The judge said there was not enough evidence to suggest Howard was fleeing, but he did find it hard to believe that Howard had forgotten the terms of his bond. The judge revoked the bond and also denied a motion from the prosecution to show evidence Howard was fleeing. And so, essentially, the judge was like, let's just get on with the fucking trial already. I don't want to go back. We're not going to tell the jury that he was arrested and that his bond was revoked. Let's just get fucking through. Okay, folks. So, at that point, it was the defense's turn. And the defense attorney, Jason Johnson, his defense was essentially that Kendi was suicidal. She was living a double life. She wasn't, and this is gross, quote, confident in her body.
Ew, you fuck.
Which, what the fuck, dude? She wasn't confident in her body, so she killed herself. Shut up. Shut up. He also said that she was drinking and just had a fight with her brother, which clearly women are so fucking fragile that if they're having a day where they feel like their ass is particularly fatter than normal and they have a couple glasses of wine and fight with their brother, they're definitely going to kill themselves in a bathtub for no reason at all. Fucking guy. The defense began with a neighbor of the Howards named Carrie Maitland, who had lived next to them for about 20 years. And she testified that she had been concerned for Kendi's mental health in the fall of 2020, about 6 months before her death. On the stand, she described an emotional conversation where the two women discussed Kendi's extramarital affair. Quote, she became inconsolable, Maitland said. She got angry and she was mad and she was sad. She was spiraling, end quote. After Kendi's death, Maitland testified that Daniel Howard became solemn and withdrawn. She said she helped him organize his late wife's possessions to be sold to consignment shops. Riveting stuff, defense. So Johnson also disputed the prosecution's narrative of the scene. He said that the gun used only had Kendi Howard's DNA on it, along with another unidentified male. There was no trace of Daniel Howard's DNA. Kendi Howard had no DNA under her fingernails, and Daniel Howard had no defensive wounds on his body the night his wife died. He also argued that the medical examiner had found no signs of petechiae, which are the rupture of the blood vessels in the eyes. Her hyoid bone, which is a small bone in the throat, which is generally broken during strangulation, had remained undamaged. He claimed that the experts said that the mechanics of the scene are consistent with suicide, including blood caked onto her back, a wet towel in the bedroom, and her purse in the bathroom where she had kept her gun. I'm not sure how a wet towel in the bedroom has anything to do. Well, frankly, anything. He's a douche. Then they brought on medical examiner Dr. John Howard. Now, you guys remember Dr. Howard Wright, the professional bozo who said her death was clearly a suicide. Well, it turned out his testimony for the defense was as equally incompetent as his original autopsy findings were. When he was asked to be a witness for the defense, he never asked for or was given a case file to review. He did not review any of the reports from any of the other experts. And when it was found that Kendi had received more than 30 bruises on her body before she died, he admitted he had never taken any photos at the time of autopsy. The only reason that the prosecution even had photos is because Acevedo had taken them herself when she had been at that funeral home and had seen her and been like, this looks fucking fishy. And she had taken all of these photos. When asked if he had looked for other possibilities of death, Dr. John Howard told prosecutors there wasn't evidence of any other explanation other than suicide. Quote, this has the same appearance of other gunshot wounds that proved fatal in other cases. When asked why he ruled in the manner he did, there is no reason for me to believe there is any other cause of death. Unquote. Among the defense's other witnesses was Daniel Howard's father, also named John Howard. And this John Howard told the jury his son was a family man who always started projects and followed through. He never witnessed him quick to anger, and his son was, quote, always responsible with money. Daniel Howard had called his father the night of Kendi's death to tell him what had happened, and his dad described his demeanor as quite upset because he could barely understand Daniel over the phone since he was screaming and crying. John Howard drove the 4 hours to Athol, where the rest of his family was hugging each other and crying. He testified that when a memorial for Kendi was held, Daniel Howard did not attend. His father said on the stand that there were rumors flying surrounding her death and said, quote, I told Dan, don't go, because it was not worth the confrontation. He wanted to go very bad. And I can understand him not being at the funeral. I think there are a multitude of reasons other than you being guilty of killing someone why you wouldn't go to their funeral. Something that was that traumatic. You guys were divorcing. There's a lot of animosity with the family. You don't want your kids to be put in the middle. Like, I can understand a whole bunch of reasons. So I don't think that's really here nor there. Also, her friends that were with her when she was camping and they had like seen the bruises with her the summer before, they testified. And the husband said that he had been at a party once with Dan Howard, and Dan Howard had been bragging about how he could make a murder seem like a suicide. And with stuff like that, and just, I don't really see that so much as a sign of like guilt, so much as a sign of just someone being a douche.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean?
Like, and also, I mean, seriously, if you're gonna, if that's your party trick, like maybe you shouldn't, you know, that shouldn't be how you actually end up doing someone in. Because it just seems really suspicious. You know?
Well, it just sounds so stupid.
The real,
just like have such secondhand embarrassment for people like that.
For sure. But all I'm going to say is Acevedo is the real MVP of this story.
I mean, she's the fucking queen of the story. We give a lot of shit to people. Like, I particularly have an attitude about people that are not physicians being coroners. I just think it's one of those jobs you should, you know, have some pretty heavy duty experience for. But this woman clearly did a good job. She was clearly good at her job. She was clearly following through way more than this fucking
she
doctor
gave a shit.
Who was.
You know?
She gave that's a shit. Huge this part guy of it. Clearly did not. Mm. Yeah.
Testimony continued with defense report expert Jeffrey Desmoulin. He said the goal of his investigation was to disprove suicide, and his findings suggested Kendi did die of suicide and not of asphyxiation by Daniel. He testified to simulating 10 scenarios to help come to this conclusion. This is physics-driven. He testified Kendi had a mark on her hand, which he said could have come from a firearm following a self-inflicted shot. Under cross-examination, he testified that it was also consistent with other potential injuries. He further testified to performing tests regarding the blood on Kendi's face under her matted hair. He told the jury he tested blood accumulation on skin in a water basin. He told the jury he used sheep's blood, human hair, and pig skin to perform tests on the skin of blood stain. Photographs of his test were shown to the jury. He testified there was one scenario his testing revealed that found Kendi's death was consistent with suicide. Prosecutors questioned why, upon reviewing other findings of experts stating Kendi Howard was already dead when the shot was fired, he still found a scenario indicating suicide. Desmoulin pointed back to the original ruling of Dr. John Howard, who found Kendi was killed by a gunshot wound. Prosecutors questioned him about the blood, or lack of significant blood, in the bathwater. Quote, "There's very little blood in the water," prosecutors said. "Nobody knows that," Desmoulin responded. He further testified, He further testified regarding the blood that it, quote, "sinks in water, and that is indisputable." I'm like speechless. Like, how is this even real? How did they let this guy on the stand be for serious right now?
They brought him in from Canada.
Canada,
he was an international witness.
And he was, to make matters worse, the final witness for the defense. March 19th, 2024, Daniel Howard was found guilty of second-degree murder and domestic battery. As the verdict against Daniel Howard, 58, was read, some of Kendi Howard's family loudly gasped. Others wiped tears from their eyes. Everyone was met with a hug from one another. Howard showed little emotion and spoke briefly with his attorney. He voluntarily put his hands behind his back to be led away to the Cooney County Jail, where he will be held until his May 23rd sentencing. Kootenai County Prosecutor Stanley Mortensen told media outside the federal building in Coeur d'Alene that his team is satisfied with the second-degree murder conviction because it still can result in life in prison under Idaho law. But he said it's still hard to take a victory lap. "We are here because of a loss of life," Mortensen said. Kendi Howard's family lost a daughter, a sister, a mother, and a grandmother. Kootenai County Sheriff Robert Norris also spoke outside the courthouse following the verdict. He said the three-year investigation was, quote, "done in an outstanding manner." He will spend many, many, many years in a lonely existence in a state prison, Norris said. Justice was served.
Yeah, and he's not going to be sentenced until May. And he could get up to life. Highly doubt that he will.
So frustrating.
It was a second-degree murder that he was convicted of. So my guess is he'll spend like 15 to 20 years, which sucks. I'm glad that he was found guilty. And hopefully the family can have a little bit of like peace with that knowledge, right, at least, because they had to wait 2 years for him to get arrested.
Yeah, that would be,
you know.
That would be so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Russ is baking bread right now, and my house smells so good.
Yeah, that sounds delish.
Yeah. It's not good for my ass. I mean, I'm not going to get so upset that I off myself in a bathtub because of all the bread that I've been eating.
Noted.
Lawyer of Daniel
Howard. You heard it here first.
She was unhappy with her body. Shut up. I hate it. I hate it so much. All right. So this Idaho, technically, I'm going to be talking about a medical examiner's office in Spokane, but these deaths, many of them are in Idaho. And I found this article by a reporter named Samantha Wolfiel. And I'm just going to read you guys a little story about 14 investigations into different autopsies that the Spokane County medical examiners were involved in. And this is the most baffling, batshit, upside down, nonsensical. I don't even have a word. Let's see if you can come up with a word while I'm doing this. All right. To Heather Otsby, it doesn't matter that the commission that oversees the practice of medicine in Washington State did not find anything wrong with the way her mother's autopsy was conducted. The commission's decision this month to close a year-long investigation into 14 autopsies means that both Spokane County medical examiners are, in the state's eyes, in the clear. In short, they didn't deviate from the standards of care in their work. But this doesn't change the fact that in her mom's case, Cindy Lou Zeppenfeld Bergen was trying to escape domestic violence and had filed for a protection order before she went missing in January of 2016. Her body was found that month on the side of the road near Cataldo, Idaho, wrapped in plastic and duct tape. Yet the 46-year-old's death certificate said she died of natural causes. Dr. John Howard, one of the medical examiners, conducted the autopsy and found that Bergen likely died of a heart attack. Relying on the forensic pathologist's expertise, the Kootenai County deputy coroner signed off the death was natural.
I can't.
No, I'm not done. Now, for Julie Beauchene, learning that the commission has closed its investigation puts her at a loss for words. Because in 2012, her cousin, Carla Williams' body was found cut in half and stuffed in a sleeping bag in the woods. Dr. Howard performed the autopsy on her remains and ruled the cause and manner of death as undetermined. Undetermined. She was cut in half. He said he couldn't rule out that she died of an overdose and that someone had just disposed of her body by cutting her in half first.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. Now, the Spokane Police Department hired a second forensic pathologist to review the autopsy, and in his report, he determined she was likely sexually assaulted and killed, and her death should have been ruled a homicide. His report pointed in part to stab wounds that could indicate she defended herself, and the fact that her undergarments had been cut off. Now, this is a real kick in the face. DNA on tape and clothing in the bags came back to a man named Robert Davis, who is currently in prison for sexually assaulting someone in 2014, but he hasn't been charged in relation to her death because it has been listed as undetermined. She was stabbed. She was cut in half.
How's this guy still have a fucking job? Seriously.
He doesn't. He doesn't anymore. Good. But he retired.
Oh, for fuck's sakes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, multiple people involved in the complaints wonder why these two doctors, Howard and Aiken, seem unwilling to change their determinations. All the families have talked to medical examiners about their cases, but Entwistle says they pretty much dug in their heels and stuck with their initial findings. These cases are blatantly homicides. It is beyond comprehension why they're not able to look at these autopsies as medical examiners and see the truth anymore. I think they become blind to it. Unquote. Neither Howard nor Aiken responded to multiple emails requesting comment. Now, right now, there is no process to appeal a medical examiner's decision. The only thing they say is you can take them to court, but you have to pay for it, and the burden of proof is on you. How many violent crime victims' families can do that? Of the fact that some determinations can stop police investigations in their tracks, Gail Labuti wonders whether it is the protocol for making judgment calls about how someone died that should be changed. Her daughter, Sarah Schmidt, was found in the Spokane River in May of 2016, and Aiken ruled her death a suicide before the results of a toxicology report came back. Schmidt had handprint-shaped bruises and other injuries, but once police shared evidence with Aiken and she made her ruling, the investigation was concluded, leaving the family wanting more answers. So, essentially, police have their hands tied because the medical examiner's office says, nope, this was an accidental drowning. Nope, this was a suicide. Nope, this was natural causes. And without a death certificate that says this was a homicide, they can't do anything. Or even this is undetermined, continue to investigate. They write these determinations that are clearly fucking bullshit, and then the police can't do anything. Their hands are tied. They're like, well, they say it's natural causes. They say it was a suicide. I can't investigate it anymore because they say it wasn't a murder. They say it wasn't suspicious. Anyway, this fucking moron, John Howard, did retire.
Finally. Was he forced to retire, or did he retire on his own? Do you know? I don't know.
I did read in one article that when he was like looking into Kendi's death or when he was doing her autopsy, he was like, very close to retirement. And so they just sort of thought that he had the case of the fuckets. But then going back and like looking at all of these 14 deaths that they investigated, it wasn't just he had a case of the fuckets. Like he had a terminal, lifelong, career-long case of the fuckets. This woman was cut in half.
Well, and the other woman who was wrapped in plastic and duct tape. Like, I'm sorry, sir. She died of natural causes, and somebody comes across that body, they're going to call the fucking authorities. They're not going to be like, well, I think for sure I'm going to wrap it in plastic and duct tape and still leave it on the side of the road.
Well, and no shit, she had a fucking heart attack. Somebody wrapped her in plastic and duct tape. Any normal human person would have a fucking heart attack. That's scary.
To say the least. That's so fucked up. If I was these families, I would be beyond, like, I don't even have the vocabulary to articulate
how
ragey this makes me. And what it would be like to be these families.
No.
The best you can hope for in that case is an undetermined cause of death, because then at least it's not closed.
Yeah, and the fact that they were digging their heels in and not even willing to be like, you know what? You guys want to continue on? The police want to continue investigating this? I can say undetermined. Sure.
Right.
Just don't put anything then.
Oh, God. Well.
Anyway, but I'm going to post pictures of Kendi. She looked like she was fucking good time.
Sounds like she's.
She looks like she'd be somebody we'd be buddies with.
Well, that is a story of so many dickbags and justice. And the life of crime of John Howard.
That's not his name.
And the life and crimes of Dan Howard.
Yeah.
And the total shitbird of a medical examiner, John Howard. No relation. Hope you enjoyed hanging out with us.
Yes. And if you did, head over to Patreon, get signed up. You will have access to all of our previous Patreon bonus episodes. Also, all of our Let's Get Intimates that were previously just available to our Garnet level subscribers. All there for $5 a month. You get early, you get ad-free, and our April Patreon bonus episode is going to be about Idaho's own belligerent drunk uncle, Ammon Bundy, and his incomprehensible choices that embarrass us on a molecular level.
While he rolls around in a rolly office chair right out of a state capitol.
Yeah, so that should be a good one.
He's my nightmare.
It's my nightmare. All right, guys, we will see you next time.
Keep pants on.